You're listening to the Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Dr. Nina Show on LA Talk Radio. I am your host, Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, and I am here to help you break free from body shame, binging, and diets that don't work. I want you to wake up and think about your day, not your diet. That is the goal. And by the way, if you love the show, please take a moment to go to Apple Podcasts and leave me a rating or a review. The Dr. Nina Show on LA Talk Radio. It would mean so much to me. Thank you so much. Okay, so today I first want to say that I've had a number of people who tell me that they feel guilty talking about or thinking about their behavior with food or their weight and all of that in light of what is happening in Ukraine. What is happening in Ukraine is tragic. It's devastating. It is heartbreaking. And it is something separate from what is going on with you. Having horrible things happen in the world, which happens pretty much all the time. I mean, we could talk about other atrocities throughout the world that are happening at any given time. Not that I am parent. And they are tragic, and our heart goes out to those people, and we have to do whatever we can do to help. Look, my grandmother escaped Ukraine in before World War II. So my heart is with the Ukrainian people, and it's just devastating. However, what is going on in your world deserves and needs your attention as well. Just because someone else is going through terrible suffering doesn't mean you can't attend to your own suffering. It's not a comparison game. Some people are trying to survive atrocity, war, terrible circumstances. Their battle is for survival. Your battle may be inward. You may be battling yourself. You may be in a war with yourself and with food and your weight and all of that. That matters too. If it matters to you, it matters. I remember a long time ago, there was a tsunami. Maybe 10 years ago, there was a tsunami in Japan. And a friend of mine, her parents had a very expensive house, still have it, multi-million dollar house at this time, at that time even. And half part of their house burned down. And a lot of people told them, oh, well, at least you still have a house. You know, you shouldn't worry about how, you know, at least you can rebuild. Those people in Japan, they lost their houses. They lost their lives. You are actually lucky. So the message was like, hey, be grateful that a fire only destroyed part of your house. No, a fire destroys part of your house. That is, in Japan lost their homes. So if you are feeling guilty about struggling with food, with weight, during a time of crisis in Ukraine, in the world, please, please know that whatever you are going through, that needs your attention, not your condemnation. Okay, so so one of the questions that I've had recently is what to do after a binge. What do you do after a binge? By the way, if you would like to join me, if you would like to call me today, the number is 323-203-0815. As you know, the real problem with binge eating, stress eating, any kind of emotional eating, the real problem is not food. It is what's eating at you. And I invite you to with you. Josh on Instagram is saying maybe you could talk about the superego. No, Josh, I'm not going to talk about the superego, but if you would like to call in and discuss your own critical voice, I'd be happy to do that. This isn't a class on psychoanalytic theory. I want to talk about what is specifically going on with you as an individual. And that means you, Josh, you, anyone who is listening to the show, either live or later on Apple Podcasts or on Instagram, where I also live stream, we're not talking about theory. We're talking about you. What is going on with you? What are your conflicts? What is the war within? And when we resolve that, you know what? You make peace with food as well. So, gotten some questions about what to do after binge. Well, you're thinking about figuring out, you know, why you binged, then you're already a step ahead. Because if you want to stop binging, focusing on food is the worst thing you can do. Thoughts and beliefs, conscious and unconscious, lead to emotions, reactions, which lead to behavior. If you are only focusing on the behavior of a binge and you're making all kinds of plans to not have this in your house and never eat that again, and you're going on a diet tomorrow, and you go into that mode where you are focusing on what you're eating, what you're going to eat or not eat, then you are focusing on the wrong thing. Because we are not, by the way, triggered by food. A lot of us think we're triggered by ice cream, triggered by chocolate, triggered by whatever. No, we are not triggered by food. We are triggered by a situation. Often it is hidden from us, or maybe don't want to look at, or don't know how to cope with. So that's why focusing on what you're eating is the worst thing that you can do. So first, you got to figure out why you binge from a place of curiosity, not criticism. Be curious, not critical. When you figure out the why, often the hidden why, that helps you because you know what it is that is triggering you, and you can find new ways of coping with that so you don't use food to cope. So, you know, that is part of healing, and that is a crucial step to freedom with food forever. Right? I believe in liberation. I don't believe in recovery. Liberation means you won the war. The number to call, by the way, is 323-203-0815. Nicole is asking me on Instagram, so hopefully she's about to join us. So what to do after a binge? First of all, be a detective. Right? Be a detective, figure out why you binged in the first place. What was the trigger? And remember, we're not triggered by food. We are triggered by situations. And also consider, was the trigger deprivation? Because we usually want what we cannot have. I will get to all of these in more detail in just a moment. Also, be a friend to yourself. You know, if a friend of yours says, oh my God, I binged, you wouldn't say, you are so disgusting, I can't even look at you. You would say, Nicole, you would say, hello? Oh, what happened? Talk to me. Hi, caller. I'm not sure. Hi, Nicole. Oops. Hold on. I just lost my, hold on. I can't see anything. Hold on one second.
No worries. Let me know when you can hear me.
I can hear. Okay. This is always fun to do a radio show from your house. Okay, I hear you. Hello.
Okay, yay. Hi, how are you?
I am well. How are you, Nicole? What is going on?
Okay, I was just listening to the show, actually, and, you know, this the whole thing with it's not what you're eating, it's what's eating at you, and to look at what's eating at you. So my question is, what if what's eating at you cannot be resolved? So a lot of things, it's like, oh, I ate that because I was really nervous or anxious about this. And then you realize that, and then you deal with what's actually eating at you. But what if what's eating at you is not something that you can actually fix because it's not in your control? Or if that makes sense. I hope that makes sense.
That makes a lot of sense. And I first want to say that we don't feel our feelings or deal with and process our feelings to change the situation. We do that to change the way we feel about the situation. So my grim but perfect example is when someone dies. We grieve. Mm. We go through the mourning process. And we don't do that to bring that person back to life, right? We do it so that we feel better about the loss. So it's not mm-hmm. about changing the situation. It's about changing the way we mm-hmm. feel about the situation.
Got it. Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. I like it.
and how do you do that, right? It's not just sitting. I just want to say, it's not just like sitting in your feelings. A lot of people say, I don't want to sit in my feelings, as if that is the way you process right. feeling. It's not. We want to be able to express feelings and then respond to ourselves.
So can I give a specific example of situation?
Yes, or absolutely. Yes.
Okay, so let's just say my husband doesn't get along with somebody, a specific person in my family who I'm very close with. Mm-hmm. I can't force, like, that's his personal stuff that he needs to work on. So it's not like I can't fix that relationship. It's out of my control, but it still bothers me and it still comes up and there's still anxieties that are associated with it. I can't relationship or just keep reminding myself and acknowledging that it's his stuff and her stuff, and like they just need to work on their stuff and it has nothing to do with me, and acknowledge that, talk to myself like I would talk to my best friend and just say, I acknowledge it's difficult, it's not the most ideal situation, I acknowledge that this upsets you, whatever, and then like get over it.
Well, you can't really get over it by just going into the logical, right? So the logical, which is what you just said, it's all very logical, except when it comes to being a human being in this planet, we're not logical, it's psychological. So before you get to the point of, you know, okay, I've just got to come to terms with the fact that there are limitations, what does it mean that your husband doesn't get along with some member of your family?
Oh, got it. It means that perhaps the relationship that I wish they could have, they can't have, and then it affects my relationship with this family member. So I guess that's what it means. And it also means maybe that I feel like if he loved me enough or respected me enough that he would be able to just compromise or I don't know. But I also know that that it's not logical. It's to that point of it's not logical, it's psychological. I'm also aware that there are probably wounds that are being triggered that are psychological and not logical. So it's too painful. So it's not about me. I don't know.
So you can see how on the surface it's between your husband and whatever family member, but look at when we dig a little bit deeper, it's about your relationship with him, and if he loved and respected you enough, he'd be able to get over it. So there's a part of you that might feel hurt so you want to challenge that idea. If we're going to be in the logical part, let's challenge the notion that if he really loved and respected you, he would get over it and get along with, I don't know, either your sister or your mother. So challenge that part. Is that really
so
true?
Am I supposed to respond to it or what? Yeah. When you say you challenge it, what do you mean?
To say, you know, is that true? Is this a matter of love and respect for you? It can be measured by his ability to get along with someone in your family.
Good question. I don't know the answer to that. I don't know. I don't know I think it might just be his limitation or like stuff that he needs to work through and process, and that it's not really about the family member, but it's more about him. So maybe it has nothing to do with me.
Exactly. It doesn't reflect his love or respect for you. It means he's being triggered in some way I'm sure, by this person.
Yeah. Yeah.
And,
I love that.
And
I see and, how you did all of that.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then the other that brings up that you can't change the situation. You can't change the family member. You can't change your husband. You can't make everything better, which can make you feel powerless and which you have to be aware of and watch out for is do not turn that powerlessness over the situation onto powerlessness over food.
Love. Okay. Thank you so much.
Yeah. You're welcome. And it's a great question. So then also come to terms with your disappointment. Like, what are the feelings of it? You're disappointed. Maybe you're upset. Maybe you're frustrated. And so all of those feelings will need expression. Right? I'll just sort of like, not to either of them, but maybe, you know, to a friend or to your journal or in some way express your feelings. And that's when you validate and reassure yourself and acknowledge and reassure yourself.
Okay. Thank you so much.
You are so welcome, Nicole. It's good to hear from you and good luck with the situation.
It sounds very serious. Okay. Bye. Thanks again.
Bye. Yeah, great question. Great question. We do not feel our emotions so that we change our situation. We feel our emotions so that we change the way we feel about the situation. So, again, let me just briefly go over what to do after a binge. Be a detective. Be curious, not critical. Why did you binge? What was the trigger instead of focusing on food? Was the trigger deprivation? We often want what we cannot have. So if you haven't been eating XYZ, as an example, I was in China several years ago and I didn't have a single carb for almost 3 weeks. And I got back to LA. I don't even like bagels that much. I just don't even like them, but I had the biggest craving for bagels. You know, like I wanted it because I hadn't been able to have it for 3 weeks. So again, that's not necessarily an emotional craving. It was a physical, psychological craving. You know, we want what we can't have. If you tell yourself you can't have, ice cream for a month, and then when you have the chance to have ice cream, you're going to have it. And then you're going to be like, oh, I blew it. I might as well have all the ice cream. And that's how that works. Deprivation or anticipation of deprivation can lead to binging. Be a friend to yourself. I'm going to get more into all of these later. And also don't vow to be good later with food. Good. What is good with food? You know? Oh, I ate a salad. I was good. Oh, I ate a pizza. I was bad. Can we please take morality out of food? You ate a freaking piece of pizza. It is not the end of the world. Josh, no, I don't think that craving was psychological. I actually think it was like physical. I've been so deprived of bread that I think I wanted it. So that was an imperfect explanation because it really was psychological. So be a detective. Again, when you binge, it is time to get curious. Oh, Carly Gash, sorry. Hello, Carly Gash.
Hi, Dr. Nina. How are you? Do you hear me well?
I hear you well.
Nice. Dr. Nina, I noticed recently that if during the day I have like a group meeting or I meet my therapist, I talk to somebody who is kind of from a supporting side, this day goes well and I feel like better, good, you know. But in between, I also have days where I don't meet those people. Those days I feel so bad and honestly like kind of more on the side of like this critical chastising voices. And then I just felt sad that I cannot have this kind of people and conversation interactions on a daily basis. So right now I'm really challenged, and I'm really working to build, like, to keep this nice feeling after talking to good people in those days where I actually am not surrounded by them.
Okay, so here's something I want you to think about. You are saying when you are not with supportive, kind people, that you get in touch with the voices of your inner critics, which are your family members, you know, in Kazakhstan, in your head, right? So they're not with you, but they're not with you. They're in Kazakhstan, but they are in your head. So likewise, think about it like this. You're not with the supportive people, but they can be equally with you in your mind. You have to think about, what would they say to you? What would your therapist say to you? What would the people in the group say to you? Maybe there's a way that you can go on the Facebook group of the group and connect with people. But more so, what would the supportive people say to you? Because neither of them are with you. You're not with the mean people, and you're not with the nice supportive people. So you just have them in your mind. Which one are you going to listen to?
Okay. Yes, and like also triggered in my binge eating a lot, doing it because of the situation, but probably everybody talks about it. I have so much, I don't know how to express it, rather than, I just recently, I was just shouting, like, I hate you, like, you know, in the apartment. But why am I laughing? It's not even funny. It's sad. Seeing what's going on.
Carla Gash, I want to stop you because I noticed that your question was, what do you do when you aren't talking to or with supportive people? How do you cultivate a kinder response to yourself? I point out that you're not with either people, but you listen to the mean, judgmental voices in your head. And your next association was to anger at world events or anger. So I think that's an interesting thing to look at. Why did your mind go from staying with the support of you to getting angry? You cut off from your supportive part by associating to anger. That's interesting. Why?
I recently came to this mind that to this thought. So when I was younger, I didn't have much of resources. I would say nothing. And I was given a task to succeed beyond. And I did. So I guess that's my, like, the mode. So right now I'm really working hard to change it to the, I can be comfortable, I can be safe, and I can be at the same time successful and pull the results. I guess that I'm just panicking, thinking that if I'm getting comfortable or supported or loved, I probably won't be able to work. Or, I mean, I can work, but I feel like I cannot fully form it yet, because I'm still forming it in my thinking.
Okay, so I think it sounds as if you have some association with when things go well and you feel good, it's a setup for something bad. And so your mind can't really hold on to even the possibility of, hey, I could feel good and things can go well. That scares you instead of soothes you.
Yes, previously I worked on that too so many years. And I think I already kind of understood this thing that, you know, when the rock pulled out, I think right now it's another layer, because I chipped that big chip away, but another chip revealed now. So the fear is like, what if is that what if I'm already trained to succeed in harsh environment and like incredible scarce resource or like survival kind of conditions? What if I won't be able to be consistent in getting the success while I'm comfortable? So I guess like a distrust in myself.
Let me address
something.
Let me address that. Actually, I'm glad you brought that up because someone in my Food for Thought community asked me a question about what if versus what is. So this allows this allows me to answer you and her. What if is fear about the future. And it is, it is just terrible because it makes you feel anxious in the present about a future that hasn't existed and may not exist. So the antidote to this what if thinking is what is, which is reality, what you know out. And then of course you can use food to calm yourself down. What is reassures you. What is reality and what you know to be true. So, you know, can you be a diligent, you know, you're worried about working. Can you be a diligent worker? Yes, you can. What are the other fears?
Sorry, the other fears, let me think. The fear of failure. But I mean, my whole life I've been failing so much. That's why I'm successful. I always fail and I get up. But I'm still like afraid of failure sometimes. I mean, it's not logical fear.
What does failure mean about you? What is failure? If we say, oh, I'm a failure, where you personalize it, then it becomes an indictment of you as opposed to I tried this and I failed. And that's why I want to direct you to Michael Jordan's very famous quote about how he's failed over and over and over and over in his life. And then goes on to say how many winning shots, how many games he lost because he took the winning shot and failed, blah, 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 blah. And then he's, Carly Gash, hold on. Because when you start talking over me, you're not listening. When you go to fear that you are a failure, because what he says is he failed so many times and that is why he succeeds. When you think of failure as you are a failure, you, Carly Gash, are a failure, that is bearable. And it no longer becomes about your character, yourself, your future, just something that happens, which is a necessary part of going to success. It is much more bearable and much less frightening.
So I found, while you were talking, I figured out, Dr. Nina. So you also mentioned in your book, Thomas Edison, who said, I didn't fail 700 times to invent a light bulb. I succeeded in proving those 700 ways don't work, and I found the one which works. I'm kind of like Thomas Edison. I don't know, my brain works like this. I will fail all the way. So like try them and like find the working system. And it takes honestly longer in my life. And in the initial stage, I always look like I am left behind because I totally do the things which other people, like majority average, my people like, why are you doing this? Just do this and get your money. Like, why are you like going other direction? But I never listened and I always succeeded. And I would just change layer after layer of people just quickly overcoming or succeeding more than they did. Like, and later on, maybe after a year or two, being able to do way more than they could, how they convinced me to do business or to do something. But
why are you afraid of failure?
I guess, Dr. Nina, this week I'm also working on kind of accepting myself and not justifying myself to others or my actions, my thoughts, my way of living and being, kind of more trusting myself. I think I'm struggling with this because I need to trust myself, but there is a problem with that because I hear being a person who thinks differently from the crowd, since I was having other thoughts, rarely was accepted by people, like in terms of thinking or my bigger ideas, because they don't see end result. They cannot even imagine, visualize what I'm talking about. But like after 5, 10, 15 years, it comes into place.
Okay. I got to stop you. And then I got to move on because I want to finish this. I want to point out to you that what you started saying was you're afraid of failure, vulnerable feelings, and now you're talking about how great you are and how people envy you and all of this. And you've swung from fear to kind of like this, like telling yourself that you're so wonderful and people are going to be jealous of you. So I guess you're saying two things. One is fear that you're not going to be able to do what you want to do and feeling as if you're not good enough, but also if you do it, that you're going to incur envy and jealousy and negative reactions from others. And those are both
not that, Dr. Reason. No, I already kind of worked this situation when I was working with envy and jealousy. That's in the past. Right now, I don't think that. I think that just not being understood, this, I don't have this heavy negative expectations from them. Just I guess it's just uncomfortable not being understood, working on the things I cannot explain to people who then maybe have the same vision. I guess it's like more.
That's something very different from fear of failure. So you want to be able to support yourself. Your original question when you called in was, what do you do when you're not with someone who is supporting you, an actual other mm-hmm. person, and you get in touch with those inner mean thoughts? So your thoughts will be to friend to yourself, to lift yourself up and encourage yourself. And when you do that, you keep the other voices out. So I hope that helps.
Yes, that's the answer. The answer. Even if people don't see my vision yet, or I guess I just need to support myself if I don't have like a flesh and body human being supporter who maybe doesn't understand it yet.
Carly Gash, you don't have a flesh and blood detractor either. These are all taking place in your mind. No one is sitting in your apartment going, you're a piece of shit. You are telling yourself that. So no one is actually flesh and blood there denigrating you and castigating you and being nasty to you. You're doing it to yourself in the voices of other people that raised you. So if you are doing it to yourself, you can access a kinder, more supportive and encouraging inner voice as well. So think about that and keep me posted.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Nina. Have a good day.
You too, Carly Gash. Bye for now.
Okay.
Yeah, we internalize the way we're treated. So, you know, Carly Gash is saying she doesn't have someone actively there to support her, but she doesn't have someone actively there to be nasty to her. It's all coming from within. So we can either listen to our inner critic or we can listen to our inner supporter and be a friend to ourselves. Which is part of what I'm going to talk about today, maybe into next week. We'll see how it goes. Okay, so you are not binging. So this is what to do after a binge. Be a detective. You are not binging because of willpower. It is not willpower. It's not a food. You binge because you're turning to food to cope or to protect yourself from something painful or to express it. Often people eat so much they're in physical pain, which is an unconscious way of turning physical pain, emotional pain, to physical pain. You know, we don't actively think of it. We're not like, let me eat all this so my stomach will hurt and that will be me turning my emotional pain into physical pain. We don't consciously think of it. It's unconscious, but it's happening. So turning to food, binging, is a way of coping. It is a frenemy. It does something for you. It helps you cope. It numbs you. It helps you escape. It helps you express. It numbs you, does all those things for you, but it also hurts you. That's how it's an enemy. So think about, because you're a detective, think about the events that led up to binge. How were you feeling about your situation? What was the trigger? Were you watching something on TV that was upsetting? Did you have a conversation with someone? Are you feeling lonely? Are you feeling disconnected? What are you feeling? What's going on? Like, really ask yourself questions. Dig in deeply and ask yourself what it is that was going on right before you found yourself turning to food. And by the way, giving your emotions a voice, often, you know, we can't talk to other people, about what's going on with us. Sometimes they're the ones that are upsetting us. So I love journaling for that. That really helps. Or as I said earlier, you can join my Dr. Nina's Food for Thought community on Facebook and share there, right? Because people who have all these feelings and not know what to do with them, and they get what it's like to feel so helpless and powerless over food. They get what it's like to just to struggle. So journaling, sharing with safe people, that really helps you safely express your feelings, and it's a powerful way of releasing them so you don't try to stuff them. See how that works? And remember, food is not the trigger. We think we're triggered by food. We think we crave pizza or ice cream or snacks, but food isn't the cause of a binge. Food is actually the solution to the problem. Problem is not food. Food is the solution to the problem. The problem is a way is what's going on with us. So binging is a way of symbolically seeing our emotions, or like I said before, turning emotional pain to physical pain. So we're triggered by emotions and we eat to cope. And there are two ways of dealing with feelings. One is to express them and one is to distract from them. So eating is a negative distraction because, you know, it causes you more harm than good in the long run. If you express what you feel, as counterintuitive as it may sound, the only way to get rid of feelings is to actually feel them and express them, speak them or write them. That's how we get rid of feelings. And when we learn how to express and those feelings and then respond to ourselves, we stop eating to cope. Practice makes progress. It doesn't happen overnight, but it really does. So also look at deprivation. Experience of deprivation makes us want what we cannot have. So if your diet doesn't allow you to eat some of your favorite foods or just certain foods, you will probably have a hard time stopping eating them when you let yourself have them. Boy, that was a very grammatically incorrect sentence. Let me try that again. If your diet doesn't allow you to eat certain foods, if certain foods are on the forbidden list, I can't eat that. I'm bad if I eat that. Then it's going to be hard not to eat it because we want what we can't have. And when you start eating it, it's going to be hard to stop because we have the sense of, well, I better have it now because then I'm going to go on another diet and then I'm not going to eat for X amount of weeks, months, which sets up the cycle. So the answer is to let yourself have what you want. And of course, you know, ideally in moderation, because if you know you can have pizza anytime, you can decide, A, do you want pizza? And B, how much of it do you actually want to have? If you've been listening to the show, you've heard me talk about my daughter and Halloween, my proud moment as a mother. And if you're new to the show, well, I'm about to tell you. So with this few years ago, with my husband and I, or with our daughter, our youngest daughter and her friend, who, by the way, had one of those families that said, you know, give us your candy when you're done and we will dole it out from here until next Halloween. So, of course, she was like just pounding down, sneaking as much candy as she could have. She must have had like 30 pieces of candy. You know, she had the anticipation of deprivation. I'm going to have to give my candy to my parents. They're going to take it away and they're going to give me 2 pieces a day. Or a week, or whatever they thought sugar was evil. So, you know, so I better have it while I can, was her mentality. Our daughter, by the way, I raised with, you can have whatever you want, you know? So she said, hey, I'm hungry. Mom, Dad, I'm hungry. And my husband said, well, you have like a king size pillowcase full of candy. Have some candy. And she goes, no, I don't want candy. I want real food. Oh, it's like the heavens opened up. I was like, oh, yes, exactly. Because she knew that she could have candy anytime she wanted. She didn't want it. She was in touch with her body. She knew that she wanted real food, not candy. Her friend who couldn't have candy was just eating as much of it as she could, knowing she couldn't have it later. So when you let yourself have something, it actually leads to you having less. There was a study some years ago where the researchers tried to prove that sugar addiction was a thing. They're like, we're gonna prove that sugar addiction is real. And so what they did was they had people who struggle with binge eating, and they told them, okay, we want you to eat your forbidden foods, all your foods that are on the forbidden list that you are not allowing yourself to have, all those quote unquote bad foods. We want you to have them. And the thinking was, okay, these people are going to have their food that they are forbidden from having, and they're just going to keep eating because they're addicted to sugar addicts, they're carb addicts, they're whatever it was, their premise was. And here's the interesting thing. Here's what happened. Can you guess? The research subjects, the people in the study, actually ate less. They ate less of their forbidden foods because they had permission to eat them. They could decide, did they want it or did they not want it? And they therefore had it in moderation. So this study, which started by thinking that they were going to prove that food addiction was real, actually disproved it. And in doing so, shows how important the psychological element of binge eating is. There's, you know, when you have deprivation, you're going to want more. When you take, people are able to normalize their intake. So don't be deprived, in other words. Next is be a friend to yourself. Talk to yourself as you would a friend. Friends are curious. Friends are not critical. Friends do not say, you are so disgusting for eating all that. And if they do, they are not your friends. Get rid of them. Friends say, hey, what's going on? You know, I'm here for you. Talk to me. How can I help? So think about how you are a friend to others. If a friend of yours came to you and said, oh my gosh, I ordered pizza last night and I ate the whole thing. I am so disgusting. You wouldn't say, yeah, you are. You're disgusting. I can't believe you ate the whole thing. Like, that's awful. You'd say something like, okay, what was going on? You know, it's not the end of the world. Like, that maybe, you know, pizza wasn't the problem. Like, what was going on with you? You would be there for your friend. So be there for yourself. Ask yourself questions. Ask yourself what you would say to a friend, and then say those very things to yourself. When you're a friend to yourself, when you respond to yourself, when you listen to yourself, when you encourage yourself, you don't need food to escape your own mean voice. Don't vow to be good later. Quote unquote good. Instead of telling yourself you're going to be good later, vow to be kind to yourself, to be there for yourself, to support and encourage yourself. Vow to be good to yourself, not good with food. Because when you're kind to yourself, guess what? You feel good. And when you feel good and well and better, you don't need food to escape, to cope, to numb. Amazing how that works. When we respond to ourselves, we don't need food to take care of us. Also, don't focus on the weight you gained by binging. Focus on what's weighing on you. By the way, it takes like 3,500 calories to even extra calories to even gain a pound. And we burn a whole lot of calories. like 1,200 minimum a day. Like it's more than that, just to walk around the earth, just to keep our, even if we're just sitting around all day or lying around, we still need calories to keep our blood pumping, our heart going, our, like we just, to stay alive, we still need calories. So you need a, so you'd have to eat, you know, 5.5 Whoppers or something in one sitting to gain a pound. So often when we think we gain weight, it's water weight or it's other things like that. One binge is not going to make you gain a lot of weight. And if you're focusing on your weight, you are focusing on the wrong thing, which is what you weigh instead of what is weighing on you. So instead of focusing on, oh, how much weight are you going to gain? How many calories did you eat and all of that? Focus that time and energy on why did you eat in the first place? What's going on with you? So, so, so important. Investigate what caused you to binge in the first place. So important. And also, a lot of people ask me, what do you do at night? You know, another time. But all of these tips also apply to nighttime eating. At night, we are alone with ourselves. And often we don't know how to be with ourselves because our culture is all about productivity. Do more, accomplish this, be productive. I am all for being productive. I mean, I'm all for being productive. By the way, some people don't know this, but in addition to the binge cure, I also wrote this book, Perspectives on Eating Disorders, and co-edited this book. I'm all for being productive, but if you don't have balance and you don't know how to be with yourself, then you can use food to just sort of sedate yourself. And we don't want that. We want to be able to be with ourselves, support ourselves. That's solitude instead of loneliness. So these are things that are very important to think about. After a binge, be sure to look for clues to see what triggered the binging. Ask yourself what was happening right before. Sometimes it can be tricky. Sometimes it's something you're watching on TV. Sometimes it's something you don't want to think about from earlier in the day. Was something upsetting you? Were you deprived? And again, stay curious, not critical. Be a detective and discover what that is and treat yourself as a friend. And the more you do this, the less you turn to food because you're there for you. So that is our show for today. Thank you so much for joining me here on the Dr. Nina Show. I'm here every Wednesday at 11 a.m. Pacific. You can also listen later on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get podcasts. Just look for the Dr. Nina Show on LA Talk Radio. And I'll see you next week. Bye for now.
You're listening to the Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle-Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.